Welcome to Tech Grumps. That sounds way too enthusiastic. with me this week, we unfortunately don't have Mr. Ian Forrester. He is too busy to record the program because he's moving house, which we can sympathise with. He has lots of IKEA stuff to do and BT, and it's so much that he'll be so grumpy next week after all the admin. So instead, we have brought on with us Cristiano. Say hello, hello. Cristiano.
Hello.
Cristiano is a developer, all-round nice person, and host of the Pad Addict program with Mr. Hodgson. You can find Pad Addicts at, was it padaddicts.co.uk?
Yes, that's true.
And Twitter and iTunes and all the rest. And they talk about iPads.
Yes.
Which,
although we've talked, we've just recorded a podcast and we've talked a lot about Android.
Okay.
That's fine, because mostly we talk about iPads too.
Yes.
You said when we I should also say we've got a long-time veteran of the show, Mr. Nicholas Ferrier. Say hello, Nick.
Hello, Nick.
Only a programmer.
And now Wave. Oh, well done.
So since we have a budding iPad defender with us, I thought we should probably start talking about all things Apple. And specifically whether or not you want to chew us out about anything we've said.
Okay, so I can grump for a moment about something just to start off with.
Okay.
And that's kind of the failing understanding from anybody who's never used any Apple device that macOS is exactly the same thing as iPhone OS, which just absolutely is not true. I do not need to go through an app store to put apps on my Mac.
Yep.
Actually, a Mac is remarkably a lot like having Linux with a nice UI on top of it. Mm. It's kind of why I use it. I have my POSIX shell. I can run all my little scripts. I can do everything I can basically do in Linux.
Yep. It's basically a FreeBSD with a nice user interface.
Yes, indeed. So I always get very annoyed when people go, well, you know, that's the typical thing what Apple does, and it's just not true. I mean, the certain limitation is that Apple clearly put in place for the iPhone and the iPad is clearly because those are really front-end, you know, consumer devices that they wanted to get a certain experience in there.
So are you going to say that you justify and defend the closeness, what's the phrase which is commonly used?
Wait a second, because I want to understand this point. Are you saying that people do get confused about that? Because
fuck yeah.
Yes, people do. Yeah.
Really?
A lot. Yes.
Who gets confused by this?
Just general other podcasts. Technology news reporters, TechCrunch, you know,
bloggers,
they all get it wrong, and it's all they all because most of these people never used an Apple computer. Most of these the first Apple device that they've used is their iPod, and then they've got an iPhone, and then they've seen the iPad, and basically the thing they've always seen with Apple is this closeness, which I mean I'm probably going to defend the closeness too, but just to be clear that. You know, my Mac, and I'm pretty much stuck to my Mac. I just upgraded from an iPhone to an Android phone.
Which we're going to talk about later.
Yeah, but I'm clearly not particularly an iPhone fanboy, but I'm definitely a Mac fanboy. As in, I've tried going back to Windows. Well, no, I've just not even considered.
First of all, let me say that I have never been confused about that. I understand what a Mac operating, what Mac OS X is.
You're a smart guy.
No. I'm just an ordinary bloke. But I've never been confused by that. But I do get a bit cross about this kind of, it comes from the same vein as the Sun arrogance. And the MacBook thing is, oh, yeah, well, it's Unix with a nice UI. Have you not seen Linux operating systems recently? I mean, KDE, no?
Yes, I've tried them. When I install an app on my Mac, right? So when I download a program, it comes in a nice DMG, which is basically a disk image. It's just basically an ISO, right? And it comes
What's an ISO?
It's a disk image that you could. On Windows, for instance, it's basically a file which represents a volume. So you can mount it like you would a disk. So you can basically make a one-to-one copy of what's on a DVD or a flash drive or whatever it is, a volume which you can then mount like a hard drive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I download that, I open that, I drag the app from that, virtual CD to my applications folder, and it's there. That's the install process.
How do you do that remotely? When you've left your laptop at home and you're at a client site, how do you do that remotely?
Let me understand.
Tell you how you can do that.
I know how you can do that, but that's not the point.
You can download the DMG, you SCP it to your Mac, you SSH into the Mac and type open space and then the name of the DMG file. This mounts it.
And then you type
CD / volumes / and then the name of the volume, and it'll auto.
So it is doable. It's doable.
Yes, it is doable.
It's not relying on the UI.
Let me point this out, because I've tried Ubuntu. I've every 2 years I'm trying Ubuntu or something, or some Linux version. And yes, it starts to look nice, and it's getting closer and closer. But it's simple stuff initially the problem that I had is I had two monitors, and to set up the second monitor, I had to go and edit my own, xconfig file. That's just not fun. Mm. That's not what my OS is supposed to be about.
It's also you kind of just based on the experience of bar cams and things like that. You can always tell when somebody plugs a laptop in to a projector or a screen or whatever. If it's a Mac, 99.999% of the time, it just works. You plug it in and it does, it sets up to work with the projector just fine. With Windows and Linux, you plug it in and it has roughly a 50% chance of actually recognizing the thing, the projector or whatever, and then you've got to press some sort of, function and F8 or something to get it, some Byzantine key combination. At the moment when you're completely stressed out trying to get ready to give a presentation, little things like that, they've actually kind of got right.
They just make it so frustrating. And it's loads of that stuff. But the same thing, just going back to my, just installing applications. I want to install an application on a Linux machine. I go to the package manager, I go and install stuff, and people keep insisting on me that the package manager is supposed to do everything for me. Well, trust me, it doesn't, because the amount of times that I've done something in the package manager and it's literally broken my system has happened more than once. Sorry, I don't.
To be fair, the package manager on Mac is about 10 times worse than any of the available package managers.
I'm talking about using the package manager to say install Firefox or Flock or a different browser, a consumer facing application. Because to me on a Mac, there's a clear difference between installing an application that a user is going to use and a kind of a system core utility or some kind of library that you want because you're programming something. Those are completely different users than a new browser, a different iTunes version, an editor, etc.
It's funny because I hear some of these things I hold my hands up to and I agree with, dual monitors and stuff like that. That stuff is only just getting onto people's radar where they actually worry about making that kind of thing happen. But something like this, I hear what you've just said, Cristiano, about, the package manager is so frustrating. I've heard that from a couple of different people as a reason why they don't use Linux, for example. And it just so does not match up with my experience or the experience of everybody I've actually physically met, you know.
I have never had any problem with... Well, I've had some very... The only time I've ever had a problem with apt-get on Debian or Ubuntu is when I've consciously gone in and fucked around with the sources list and done stuff which really no sane person should have done.
I mean, 90% of the time I need to go into the sources list.
Like, I've gone and dumped Debian repositories into an Ubuntu machine and then wondered why it all goes tits up.
Right. So what you're talking about, kind of both of you, I think, is I have had to use, you know, the latest and greatest, the packages coming out of unstable in Debian, for example, and stuff like that. And because there isn't really an alternative except download a tarball and try and run a build system and blah, blah, blah. But then, you know, in order to get the latest and greatest, I have to go and do that. And what Macs have got is a culture of offering you those things in better installable
ways. It's not so much that. Way. It's the fact that there is a clear, as Christian says, there is a clear separation between user-facing apps, things like Firefox or Microsoft Office or whatever it is. The process for installing those is you basically are putting, you're dumping a whole folder onto your into your applications folder. It's wrapped up so it looks like just a file, but it's like the old
but that sort of thing is just agreement, and that of course is the problem with
but the obvious thing that happens there is that there's very little dependency. I mean,
well, no, you just ship all the dependencies with with thing,
that's
right?
What I mean.
And you end up in
But we don't live in a in a society where, you know, gigabytes matter anymore,
right? Sure,
where megabytes matter anymore, right? So,
but that but it's still just agreement. It's still just agreement. Because GNU came up with a thing about 15 years ago called STO. Which basically does what you're talking about, but none of the popular Linux distros use that. They prefer to zip, you know, package managers and do things the more traditional way, partly, I guess, because, you know, that's just the way they've always done, and these guys have got limited resources. Now, the reason they've got limited resources is because no fucker will come and help them, because you're all too busy using your shiny Macintoshes.
You don't have people coming and dumping.
I won't do that.
You don't have people coming and dumping thousands of pounds on your, your shiny Apple store in Covent Garden every week, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I've often thought that the best thing we could do for Linux and so forth would be to just try and all agree to present a shiny, consistent interface to the world and charge ridiculous amounts of money for it, and then just pull that money into
that
growing stalk beard.
Did you see that video which somebody put out? And it was of I may have already discussed this on the show just with Ian. There was a video which was circulated, and it was somebody going around a shopping centre with a laptop loaded up with KDE 4 and asking people if they could, you know, what they thought of it. But they told them that it was Windows 7.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, it's wonderful. You know, I really want that. Yeah. And it's actually amazing. It's the whole thing with Linux is that for a great deal of users, it's only just getting them through the door of, oh, it's some flaky operating system written by hackers in their bedroom.
I don't think people think that at all.
I mean, my mother-in-law has been using Ubuntu for like 3 years on her Macintosh little computer because I put it on there because I knew that was like the only thing that it could run. And I mean, I know that I've got specific needs, right? I'm expecting things to... I mean, I do want to have a dual monitor set up. I do hold presentations. I do have weird hardware. But it doesn't mean that it should be harder for me to actually achieve what I want to do, and that's what frustrates me.
Okay, I'm saying
Linux is perfect for servers, and it's perfect for people who don't really expect, you know, the most polished operating system.
Yeah.
Well, it's not necessarily even polished, is it? Because polish is a matter of perspective.
Yes, exactly.
Sitting. I mean, from your experience as a hacker, and you see huge amounts of... I mean, it as a dyed-in-the-wool freedom guy, it really upsets me that so many of my fellow hackers are Mac addicts. But you see so many people using Macs for exactly the reasons that you're talking about, that... you know, you can connect it to any hardware, and obviously Apple worked really hard to make that stuff happen.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen on Linux because nobody has been... I think in our community, we either expect you to do it or we expect to do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the doing it for you has been for the dreaded mum, you know. Does it work for my mum? That, which we were complaining about in a podcast a little while ago. But that has been, that's the focus of Ubuntu, that's the, pretty much the focus of Red Hat still, and not the, let's make this work for devs, let's make it so that you can plug in any graphics card you like. And of course, that's the other thing, we don't have control of the hardware, unlike Apple, that monolithic...
No, my point is I'm not blaming Linux. I think that's often a misunderstanding, is the people who are not using Linux because they don't like Linux are not blaming Linux for the faults in Linux.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're just
not happy with it. So if there's a better thing out there and you are interested in paying for it...
No, I am blaming Windows on the other
I am blaming Windows for loads of stuff. You know, ruining society, you know, world hunger.
Well, no. It's the wealth redistribution program to take money out of large enterprises and put it in the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to go and cure various.
Yes.
It's basically wealth redistribution from Outlook customers to poor people in Africa. So, you know, so long as I don't have to be involved in that process at any point, I thoroughly approve. Anyway, we started this discussion not about Macintoshes. You've sort of slipped away from the initial focus, which is the new shiny, the iPhones and the iPads. Now,
yes. So what's your grump with them?
Well, I'm more sitting on the fence, but I think we should start with the smartphone. So you had an original iPhone.
Yes.
And you recently decided that rather than upgrading it to an iPhone 4,
yes,
you were going to switch to the Android platform, and yeah, you're now using an HTC Desire. How's that working out?
For about 24 hours now. Okay, so the interesting thing is I keep giving this example to people when I tell them about my iPhone. When I bought my iPhone, I upgraded it from some really shit Sony Ericsson, right?
And when the thing I'm still using.
Yeah, so when I bought my iPhone was just such a big leap. It was the first phone really out there that had such a good user interface that really worked, and it really just did what it said on what's the expression?
On the tin.
Yeah, sorry. And it was just miles ahead of every other phone. And I've never upgraded to any of the other ones, mainly because I'm poor. But the other reason is that none of the, like the 3G, yeah, it had 3G in it and it had GPS in it. But seriously, I don't have a car. I didn't need GPS.
But you live in this quite large city called London. It's quite useful to have a...
No, it works fine. I've got assisted GPS. And that works really well. So... I mean, it sees all the cell towers, so it can tell me exactly where I am.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason why I was kind of looking to upgrade is because it was getting slow. It was not getting the latest update. And I was kind of looking for a phone that could also do, like, wireless tethering.
Yep.
And in the new Android update, you get the wireless tethering, you get the multitasking, you get everything in there. And the phone is just so much cheaper. In comparison, I mean, I think I saved...
In comparison with the new iPhone, you say?
In comparison to the new iPhone, yes. It's like 169 quid cheaper or something, or like 200-something quid cheaper.
Okay.
I mean, and on top of that, obviously, I actually get to make phone calls with my left hand with it. You know, and if I drop it, you know, I don't get half a heart attack.
Because,
come on, who, which company in the world makes a phone which is made out of double-sided glass?
It's pretty stupid, isn't it?
It's ridiculously stupid.
What gets me, though, is the phone aspect. There's two things. I think it's interesting that you've upgraded to HTC, but from my point of view, I hate all of them. I wish I didn't, but...
I'm not saying I'm 100% happy with this Android. I mean, it's not running the latest update yet. Not because this update is not out there, but because the update isn't coming directly from HTC. The update is coming from Vodafone.
Yeah, so that's the thing.
Yes, it needs to go through. This is ridiculously stupid. This is what pisses me off. And you can say anything about Android, right? But if I've got an iPhone and the update comes out, the moment they ship the update, I've got it. Whether or not I'm in India or China or the UK, where I'm on O2 or Orange, I just get it. There's no difference. And, you know, when you buy an iPhone on Vodafone, it doesn't ship with 5 Vodafone crap apps.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, and it doesn't, like, when you load the splash screen, and when you turn the phone on, it doesn't have the Vodafone-approved splash screen.
So
you know what a couple of days ago happened, or not?
Didn't they, happen
to So HTC shipped Froyo, the new version, and... They told everybody, yeah, we're working as hard as possible to make it available to all the HTC Desire users, et cetera, et cetera. And then a few days later, they pushed an update. So everybody was, like, updating their phone. And there's actually some technical noise implications to that I can go into. But everybody updated their phone, and then they rebooted, and then they had more Vodafone branding and still no Froyo.
Right.
Because they actually just shipped... further integration is in their customer experience software.
So this is my complaint about Android, is the fact that everyone goes on about how Android gives you freedom, you're no longer shackled to the evil Apple tyranny and whatnot. Instead you get you trade in Steve Jobs, and instead you get Vodafone being the bastards.
Yeah.
Or
I mean, there's a lot of things.
Whoever the mobile, you have an iPhone or you have an Apple device, whether it's iPhone or iPad, whatever. There, you know, we roughly know exactly what Steve Jobs' interests are. He wants to sell as many shiny things to as many people as possible and make loads of money. Easy, we can understand that. Hmm. Well, if you get an Android device, it seems you're sort of in this. Your phone becomes this sort of political pawn in between Google, HTC, or Samsung, or whoever, and the mobile providers. And to be honest,
if you think about the amount of stuff that Apple, you know, tends to not do because of their ISPs, because they don't want to step on the toes of the ISPs, you're now putting the actual software in the hands of the ISPs.
Yeah. That's the thing, is that, you know, I'm not a huge fan of, you know, I'm not going to, you know, bend over for Apple, you know, but they're a hell of a lot, you know, less nasty and whatever than most of the phone companies who, you know, it's like, you know, Android doesn't seem to, you know, you can, yes, you can go and buy an Android dev phone or you can. But the fact that you have people who are basically having to, there are people who can't uninstall applications that the provider has put on the phone without sort of rooting it, and you think, well, what difference is it if I'm getting this Android, which is supposed to be this free and open platform, if it's all completely locked down by the vendor, you know, by the service provider? I'm not sure how this is really getting us very far.
Yeah.
You either, you know, you buy an iPhone and you jailbreak it, or you buy an Android and then you have to either faff around rooting,
which is basically the same thing.
Or you have to go and buy one from sort of Expansys for like £600.
Yeah.
Or get a Google dev phone, which they've now stopped selling.
Because you could tell, you could say anything about the Android and being able to, you know, the argument that people come up with is, oh, it's Linux, so you can change anything on it. Well, no, I can't. I mean, the thing that frustrates me the most at the moment with this phone is that it has five buttons on the front, one on the left side, and one on the top, right? So there's actually more buttons on it than my iPhone, which had two. You know, the hold button at the top and the home button at the bottom.
Yep.
Right? But on my iPhone, both those buttons wake my phone up.
Yeah.
Right? On the HTC Desire, it's only the top button.
Yeah. Well,
which is really annoying.
That'll probably just be it'll resolve its, you know, once you mentally retrain yourself to only push the top button, then it will.
No, it's fucking annoying because you need to change.
I agree. I mean, that's a trivial thing, right? But I agree with you. What you're saying is, I can't alter this device. We talked about this a few weeks ago. It's all very well. I mean, it doesn't let Apple off the hook in making a completely closed piece of shit. The fact is that you can make a completely open piece of shit that nobody can alter anyway, practically. That's why I'm not interested. I'm not interested that, apart from anything, the idea of touch really, really bothers me. And I feel no compunction to choose one or the other. They're both a disaster. I'm not saying that touch in and of itself is a bad idea, but this stuff is moving way too quick for me to be saying, oh yes, isn't it great? I'm going to go and buy a phone every year in order to keep up with
James. We're not saying you have to buy a phone every year.
I don't think
year.
You do. If you're 30 quid Nokia, you know, piece of shit thing which you can chuck down a slide at high speed, you know, that's perfectly fine.
I've had my iPhone for 2.5 years.
Oh, two and a half.
I'm not buying a phone every year.
Just every two and a half.
The last phone I bought was a Sony Ericsson. It cost me 70 quid, and I only bought that because the previous phone I bought about 5 years before broke.
Yeah.
I then won a phone in a hacking competition, and I still use that, and it's okay. It's a Sony Ericsson piece of shit, but I don't care.
I don't think we're talking about phones.
I don't make phone calls. So that's...
No, exactly. What made me laugh all the way through, you were talking about how wonderful the iPhone was. It's perfect. It's fantastic. It's this great phone. And all the time, I'm fairly confident you weren't talking about a phone at all. You were talking about a very portable computer.
Yeah. I'm not sure I was talking about how wonderful the iPhone was.
Or the HTC.
You were saying how fantastic, what a revelation it was, having come from your piece of shit Samsung.
Oh no! And iPhone, I heard you say this iPhone was an awesome phone. Yes,
yeah, but do you
That's
mean
a phone,
phone?
To make phone calls? Yes, it was a good phone for making phone calls. Yes, it was.
The point is, I find myself needing the phone function of devices less and less and less.
Oh yes,
and actually. For a lot of people, there's actually not much point in having a phone. You may as well get a MiFi, bloody iPod Touch, or that's the other problem with Android. There's nothing equivalent that's not a phone.
Yes. Like, well, there's the tablet that they're working on.
Well, yeah, and there's the Arcos things, but they're a bit, you know, meh.
I mean, I think my voicemail message should be a good explanation of how I feel about.
Yeah.
It's my voicemail. My voicemail message basically is, "You're calling me. What the hell? Don't."
Yeah. Send me an email.
Yeah. Send me an email. You probably know me. Send me an email.
The very idea. I mean, somebody was saying it's a totally bizarre system that you have this thing where you give out this number to absolutely anyone.
Yes.
Well, obviously within your social, you don't give it out to everyone, but you give it out to anyone who you know roughly. And you say to them, feel free to interrupt me at any time of the day or night, whatever I'm doing, and then this bell will go off wherever you are, and anyone can interrupt you at any time of the day or night.
It's a very rude
media. Geek bullshit. Utter bullshit you are talking, both of you. Really?
Of course not.
Dear, oh dear. Oh, my goodness. There are social conventions and rules that have been built up over 120 years.
Yeah, but social conventions don't stop people from being assholes.
Well,
not like
blocking
somebody on IM. Could...
they do a lot of the time, and it wouldn't change. You know, the assholes are not going to change. From they'll find arsehole-y ways to use email or Twitter or whatever, and you'll get cross with them just the same. Really, I do think you're talking a bit of twaddle.
But the fact is that, you know, I very rarely actually need the phone function. I don't receive many calls. I make calls.
That's because nobody likes you.
Well, yeah, that is a point. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy because I live somewhere with no mobile service. People can't call me anyway, so unless I go out and buy one of these frickin' femto cells or some bullshit like that.
I live in a similarly unendowed area, and it's amusing that I get texts from colleagues and things like that 3 days later.
Yeah.
and ring them on a landline or talk to them on Skype or something.
We have this thing.
Did you want X? And it's kind of self-filtered. It's marvellous. I recommend living a long way away from anywhere with a cell because it's great. People sort problems out on their own.
Yeah. We've gone through all sorts of craziness to try and get... Actually, that reminds me, one of the things which I found most annoying, I don't have an iPhone, but a family member does, and it's on O2, you know, it's a company contract thing, and we sort of thought, well, it would be kind of useful to have it so that when it's out of the service area, i.e. when it's at home, if you were to ring the number, it would redirect to the home phone, because there's no mobile service. And you have to remember, with the iPhone, you actually have to remember while you're in the service area to go in and redirect the number. You can do it from the actual iPhone interface, and it sends a message to O2 saying, from now on, redirect all the calls to this number. But the only time you can do that is when you're actually in an area with mobile service. So there's no way of doing it over the internet or anything like that. And you think, what's the point? You have this smartphone which has Wi-Fi, and it can't actually send any messages to the operator over Wi-Fi.
Oh, but surely you could use a VoIP service or something and then direct that to the iPhone.
Could do, but then you're adding yet another layer of indirection, and you have to then tell everyone that you've got a new phone number and...
That's true, yeah.
So basically we give up. And, you know, if you call, you get voicemail, and you'll get it answered in about 3 days' time when somebody walks up the hill.
But anyway, we're not really addressing my point, which is that they're all crap. And that, you know, I realise people are going, oh, yeah, well, it's a portable computer, and that's really cool. And it's got this touch interface, and that's really, you know, quite cool.
But you can't do
anything to it. Pretty much, you know, the apps I've seen are pretty stupid.
Well,
I mean, things to turn it into a torch, and some of them, I think, oh yeah, okay. Somebody again, one of the London tech community was talking about a holiday management app, and I thought, well, yeah, okay, that's quite impressive. You've made a holiday management app, but surely that should be tied into a diary and a scheduler and a calendar and.
I made
all
a holiday management application the other day, and it's part of the actual corporate management system on the website. Like, isn't that the whole freaking... having this special thing on just on the iPhone seems to be a bit of a silly idea, because
what about the employees
who don't have iPhones?
Well, absolutely, but if you've got one, then, okay, having a holiday, you know, something to manage your annual leave, that's not a bad idea, but why is it just your annual... Why isn't there a proper... If it's so fucking cool... Why isn't there a proper scheduler for managing your life on this piece of shit?
Well, there is. It's called the calendar application.
Well, but so why are people having to produce holiday management tools for it? Because the calendar management application isn't extensible
enough?
Well,
I don't know.
Suggest.
Okay, but that's very clear. Come on. I mean, you want to go on a holiday, you want to have a holiday management, right? But I want some other kind of management in my calendar, and Tom wants some other kind of management in my calendar. And before you know, you end up with some Linux can do everything.
You end up with evolution, basically.
Yes, you end up with evolution, which is useless because it does everything. So instead, Apple decided to just, you know, create one calendar, which is very, very basic. But if you want to use something else, then go ahead and install a different calendar.
It's only the same as if you have a PC and you put Word on it. Now, Word is not necessarily going to do the same things which, you know, having Vim with LaTeX will do. It's not designed for the same audience. You know, in that situation, you'll use the generic calendar. Most people will be perfectly happy with the generic calendar application, but a few people will say, oh, it doesn't quite do my needs. I'll go and spend a quid downloading this application, which adds this extra functionality. I don't necessarily see what's wrong with that. It seems to be in the same sort of class as
browser extensions.
Well, as browser extensions, or as I said, as the difference between running Word or using, you know, writing your academic work in LaTeX in Emacs or something.
My point wasn't really about the holiday management application. My point was that the things I've seen done with applications have seemed trite. Similarly, including the holiday management application, right? Because you've already got a calendar. So I would expect to be able to extend the calendar only trivially. And if you can't, then I have a problem with it. But that's not my point. My point is that the the apps that are available seem to me to be largely trite. And that's because of the constraints of having a completely new computer experience. And I'm uncomfortable with that.
So,
and in fact, not just uncomfortable, I'm cross, partly with myself for being so stuck in the mud about it, and partly with everybody else for being so, oh, it's so shiny,
well, yeah,
which is just something that just gets on my
tits. I
heard
a comment the other day saying, before the iPhone, we didn't really have apps. I felt like saying, well, what the fuck is Outlook and Windows and what kind of weird cognitive dissonance goes on in the mind of somebody who wakes up, goes to their computer, opens Firefox, you know, opens up their mail application, goes to work, uses, you know, Word or something all day, or Outlook or PowerPoint, comes home and then says, well, you know, before I got this iPhone, I didn't really use any apps.
Yeah.
Right. There's a complete cognitive, like, you know, disconnect there going on.
Of course, there's no problem with people liking something because it's shiny. I mean, it's the same reason why people, you know, have a look at their neighborhood before they buy a house. They want beautiful stuff. Yeah. They want comfort.
No, I don't think.
Yeah,
that's,
they want a shiny car, and not some old wreck.
Actually, yeah. I quite like the old wreck myself. But case, so.
I don't think it's true to say that that's a general rule, Cristiano, and that's what
I'm
saying.
I don't think it's a bad thing to have one to have a shiny device. I mean,
I do.
Let me rephrase that slightly, okay? I think it's if you're going to buy a device in a similar area already, so say a phone, I can understand that you pick a phone based on what it looks like.
Well, it's more that it's got to be a functional thing.
Yes.
The shine has got to follow on, you know, the shininess has got to follow on from the actual function.
Yeah, obviously there needs to be
rather than just being a sort of needless add-on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the amount of laptops that I've looked at, which aren't Macs, which are, you know, have these little extra rims just to give them an extra shiny rim. And I'm like, why?
Well, it's very difficult these days to actually buy a PC laptop, you know, a non-Mac laptop, that doesn't have a case that is made out of this extremely shiny black plastic that you only have to put your finger within about 5 inches of it. You don't even have to touch it, and it instantly sort of just gets covered up with grease. And you actually, if you go into, you pop into somewhere like PC World, and you will see they have a small army of people. About every half an hour, go around with a cloth, wiping all these laptops so that they're actually all shiny again. And you think, this seems to be a fundamental flaw in the design. The fact that you have to employ, you know, a couple of people inside each PC world to go around and actually keep the laptops looking...
So I've got a Dell... Sorry, no, go ahead.
No, go on, no, go on.
I've got a Dell Mini 10B, right, which has a case like that.
Mm.
My solution is just to put shitloads of stickers on the top.
Yeah. So, anyway...
It's the same with MacBooks, though, isn't it? I mean, MacBooks have a fingerprint problem.
The screens, yeah, but you're not supposed to touch the screen with your fingers.
It would... The whole glossy screen on the Mac thing is fucking annoying, I have to say.
Yeah.
It's one of the things which pisses me off most about Apple is the fact that they've gone from making screens which are actually, you know, very, very nice for people who do things like photography, a core audience of the Mac, you know, to selling these shiny screens which, you know, you try and use them on a train or something and you just get so much glare compared to the old matte finish screens. And you now have to custom order. You may not actually even be able to get them anymore. I don't think.
No. You can still get.
The MacBooks. Can still get them on the MacBook.
Yeah, they actually made it look a lot better recently because, you know, the current MacBooks have like this beautiful black bezel, but when you order the matte version, you get like this very ugly looking bezel.
Mm.
And I actually recently in the latest update, I made sure that it. Kind of looks slightly the same.
Well, since we're talking about aesthetics over function, I think we ought to move on to the iPad because...
Oh, I thought the iPhone 4.
No, we ought to move on to the iPad because you have an iPad.
And I have an iPad.
I have a shock admission to make. Have an iPad now.
Ooh!
Which probably means that Nick and Ian are actually going to gang up and come round to my house with a bag full of doorknobs and beat the living shit out of me for...
Doesn't really mean that, Tom, but it does mean that the bet you made with me some time ago, it was only 3 months, that you wouldn't buy one because you were too serious for that.
No. You misrepresent the bet. The reason I wasn't going to buy one because I didn't have any fucking money.
That's not what you said at the time.
But his grandfather just died, so...
No. It's... I have the opportunity to invoice somebody for a large amount of money this week, so it's gone on the credit card, and this person pays promptly. So
just to clarify, right, I do this podcast on iPads, but in the first episode we talked about why we bought an iPad, and I told the story because I watched the announcement, and. My first impression of the iPad was this is the most ridiculous device ever.
Yep, ditto. I think most of the world thought that.
Most of the world thought that. A difference when the iPad, once you actually hold it, or I actually got to use it for about 2 hours from a friend, and I was like, I was making all these excuses of why I kind of wanted one, and I still don't have enough excuses. That's why I bought mine together. With Melinda, so we officially have one together. But it's been purchased, and I do like the device.
That's really interesting. And I want to grill Tom as to why he's bought his in a minute.
Yes, but Tom, tell me.
I remember watching that stuff, and apart from Stephen Fry embarrassing himself all over,
into orgasmic rhapsody about it. Yeah, that was hilarious.
That's kind of embarrassing. I don't know, but is it hilarious so much as cringe worthy? But anyway, apart from that, I remember thinking, well, you know, it's a really interesting device. It would be great for book reading and all of that. But I don't, you know, I never want one because it's a closed piece of crap. So anyway, Tom, why after saying? And it wasn't just the money. You were saying, oh, no, I don't want one.
Well, I had I kind of sat there and there are a lot of things actually, like, I've got this ebook reader and it's lovely. E-ink based thing. It's basically like a Kindle, but a more open thing. You know, take SD cards and, you know, fill them up with stuff to read. The only problem with it is that the screen is not very big.
It's not what?
It's not very big.
Oh, yes.
I can just, if I have a PDF of a, you know, if I actually have a PDF of a book, like a, you know, book size piece of text, like, you know, I can just about get it so I can fit it all on the ebook reader and it's readable in direct sunlight. If the light goes down a bit, it's just unreadable. The text is too small and too grey and it's just unreadable. I have thousands of papers which I keep, which I have as PDFs that I've downloaded off the net, you know, from academic databases and journals and stuff. And I want to have access to them basically everywhere, because, you know, having to sit at my computer screen to read a paper is kind of unproductive, because you're sitting there reading a paper and you only have to move your mouse, you only have to move your finger less than an inch, and there's a nice little taskbar which lets me open up my RSS reader and open up Twitter and about a bazillion other things that are complete and total distractions from actually doing the thing I intended to do, which is read the goddamn paper. So the primary thing I use the iPad for is reading PDFs. And I have hundreds and thousands of PDFs, and I, you know, it's a really good PDF reader. There's a wonderful PDF reading application which costs 59p called Goodreader. That's really good. There's also
actually these days you don't you can just load it in iBooks.
You can, yeah. The other thing is I do a lot of stuff which I can do over SSH. So I can buy a little SSH client, and all the it's closed. I can't do what I want with it. So long as I have a network connection and I have an SSH client, I can log into my machine at home and do whatever the fuck I want to do, command line. Mm. So that objection disappeared fairly quickly. Secondly, it's, you know, everyone says, oh, well, it's just a big iPod Touch. Well, actually, I kind of like a big iPod Touch. I like my iPod Touch, and I quite like one that's four times bigger, so I can watch videos at a decent size.
It's also the comparison is absolutely stupid. It's like saying a Hummer is like a big Ferrari.
Mm. And
I don't know. It seems to me a perfectly valid comparison, and I totally get.
Well, no, an iPod Touch is something that fits. I mean, the fact that it's running the same operating system, it's like saying your Windows mobile phone that, you know, one of the first ones that really basically ran Windows. You know,
Windows CE,
it's like it's like saying those are just computers. You know, it's just a small computer.
It ignores the fact that you can do a whole bunch of things which aren't actually as easy to do on a small device as you can on a big device. And it's kind
sure,
of
sure, but that's kind of obvious.
Yeah.
Because it is bigger.
So I was sat in London all day today and took the MiFi and the iPad with me, and actually I got quite a lot of things done. Even though I was wandering around taking photos, and when I got any, when it
not
got,
with the iPad, obviously.
Sorry, no, not with the iPad. No, with my SLR. But I had things like I was reading an article on the train, which I greatly enjoyed. I wanted to blog it, you know, put it up on the blog, so I then went to the, you know, opened up the browser, went to the blog, and realized that I had actually, you know. The blogging system I use is homemade and very, very rinky-dinky. I needed to fix some PHP on the blogging system. So I popped open the SSH client, logged in, and fixed it. I mean, I'm not totally sure. There are things which I can't do on there, but the vast majority of the things I'd want to do while on a train or sitting on a park bench or whatever it may be when I'm out and about, the vast majority of the things I want to do, I can do, either by doing them in the web browser, and if there's something I really want to do on my computer, I can basically turn it into a little Sinatra or what's the Python one, web.py, or some little kind of micro web application. That's not very difficult to do these days. Or I can access it over SSH, and the vast majority of things I do on my computer either are on the command line, or they're a simple command line interface can be built very easily using things like MacRuby and stuff like that. So, actually, the vast majority of things, it's as closed as my phone. But the difference is that it's got a bloody huge keyboard and I can use it to SSH into my machine at home and do stuff. So,
yes. Did you get a Bluetooth keyboard with it? Did you get, like, the portable...
I didn't get a Bluetooth keyboard because I already have a Bluetooth keyboard, but I can't seem to actually get it to work because it's already paired with my computer.
Mm.
But I might unpair it with my computer because I very rarely actually use it. The only problem is it doesn't really help with the portability one because it's...
So you're using the on-screen keyboard?
I'm using the on-screen keyboard, and it's absolutely fine. Mm. It's a bit of a pain if you're actually trying to write code with it. It's really not very good for writing HTML with. But,
no, it misses tabs and stuff like that.
Well, it's not so much the tabs, but it's the fact that you have to press about three buttons to actually get to the less than and greater than angle brackets,
yeah.
Which makes actually putting tags in a real pain.
You can buy a Bluetooth keyboard and just use that one with it.
Yeah, I'm not wild about spending another £50 in the Apple Store.
Good point. That's why I haven't bought one yet.
But, yeah, so, I mean, there doesn't seem to, like, if you put away all the Richard Stallman free software stuff...
Yeah, let's put that away.
Which I'm not a big advocate of anyway. It does everything I roughly need to do when I'm out and about.
I have a bit of a grump about Stallman anyway, but I think everybody does. And that's that. I think there's nobody who thinks...
Does he make you feel guilty?
No, I think there's no. I think there's like a line of where people think freedom of like bits and software starts and ends.
And it's always to the left of the shine.
No, it's always miles away from Stallman. No matter who you are.
Including
you, Nick. Like there's probably stuff that Stallman thinks, you know, should be, you know, certain principles that he has that you break.
Yeah, I do, but I know that I'm breaking them, and I don't make excuses.
I know I'm breaking them. That's not the point.
No.
The point is that everybody defines their own point where they are willing to accept it.
And that's the difference. That's the difference, right? The difference between me and you two guys is that you're both saying, I don't really care about that. That's, you know, everybody defines freedom differently. I don't. I define it the same as Richard, and I break those rules. I'm not as good at following those rules as Richard. I don't turn my life into a crusade for those rules.
I also
break the speed limit, and sometimes I drop litter, and I probably do a whole bunch of other things.
I think the best equivalent is probably vegetarianism.
That's a very good...
Vegans, you got the... You know, and they all draw their own line of where they think we should draw.
I wish I
could not eat meat, but I just really, really like it.
Mm.
See, it's the other way around for me. I'm very unsure about the moral arguments for vegetarianism, but I don't eat meat, and I basically never have. So, really, the moral argument never really enters my... concern because I'm basically a totally amoral vegetarian. It's not
an amoral vegetarian.
I don't think it's the same. Vegetarianism is the right analogy either because you don't have because the moral arguments are questionable. Whereas with what Richard's saying, we've seen it happen. We've seen the practical effect of not doing what he says. And it was very, very bad. And now we're living in a world without that.
Mm.
And it's right.
Yeah, but the difference is that that's a kind of, as we said before, it doesn't follow that there's a sort of, to use a philosophical term, there is no kind of categorical imperative there. The fact that you don't want a world, you know, the sort of dystopia that Stallman describes doesn't necessarily mean that everyone has to follow the rule.
No. Unfortunately, it doesn't.
The difference is that there are some whether they're good or bad. There are some sort of Kantian arguments for vegetarianism. I can't see a similar argument for free software, except that if everyone were to basically wake up tomorrow morning and they were all running Ubuntu Linux, it would make, you know, it would make the Linux platform a hell of a lot better very, very quickly. You know, if the UN were to...
Surely the arguments for doing it, and we're going over old ground again, but this podcast is about grumpiness, and this makes me more grumpy than anything else, that this constant, and I'm going to fight it every time it comes up here, and it seems to come up a lot, the constant, oh, it doesn't matter, he's a barking idiot anyway, I don't like him. And to me, it just sounds like, yeah, I don't like him, he makes me feel guilty, because what he's talking about is the reason that you can have Apple, the reason that you can have an Apple with a Unix operating system, a decent operating system underneath it. Otherwise, what would you have?
Well, you'd have Mac OS 9.
Think about that for a bit.
You'd have Mac
you?
OS 9, and
yeah, you'd all enjoy that
three times a day because of cooperative. Yeah. Cooperative multitasking, which isn't really multitasking at all.
It may still be shiny, though, so maybe that would be okay.
Well, it had its uses as well. You know, the fact that the thing was, the actual OS was only about 30 megs or something was quite nice. But
there'd be a lot less of us in employment. We'd find it a lot more difficult. Would there be an internet? I don't think there would be a recognisable internet. And, you know, so much.
Yeah.
That is different from 1985, when you know, he started to make a difference. That, and whenever I hear people being angry about him, that makes me angry more than anything else. And in fact, it's the buying of the devices and all the rest of that, which immediately leads to that. And I think I feel guilty, so I'm actually going to say that it's all bullshit anyway.
So, I take the piss out of Storm a bit, but that's only because he is very, very easy to take the piss out of, you know, what with the whole sort of free software song, you know, eating your own feet, all that stuff. It's very, he's, you know, he really brings it on himself sometimes. But I do actually take what he says seriously, and I struggle with it. And I think a lot of us do. I mean, a lot of people who use the Mac and use iPads and iPhones and all this stuff. A lot of us actually aren't just, you know, annoying Shoreditch fucking hipsters walking around, you know, with, you know, a lot of us actually do take our sort of free software commitment seriously, in the sense that, you know, we would really like it if these things could be open. And you know, a lot of us would like to bring that world around. At the same time, we actually want to
get the shiny device.
Get the shiny device, but also be able to just get on with life and do shit. And it's a bit like, here's a better analogy. You know, you think about people who become monks or nuns and live the religious life. Now, I'm an atheist and a very angry one at that, but. Yeah, so the analogy doesn't quite hold for me, but you can admire people who decide to spend their life, you know, cloistered away in service to God, but you don't necessarily have to live that life for yourself.
Well, again, it's a self-serving analogy, isn't it? I mean, I don't recognise that analogy at all.
Well, it's a very rough analogy. But
I think that both the vegetarianism and the ascetic analogies, to me, don't represent what is being asked at all. You know, they might have done, the ascetic one might have done 20 years ago, but now, you know, there's a perfectly usable application platform. What do I hear? It's, you know, when I plug it into my second monitor, it doesn't really work.
So here's the positive takeaway. I mean, I know we're supposed to be grumpy and all that, but I think we've got an interesting discussion here. here's the positive takeaway, and I think this is probably true for Cristiano, but as well, on the stuff which we do actually work-wise in terms of building software, we wouldn't tolerate anything that's not either open source or very, very easy to replace with open source. So, for instance, I wouldn't ever dream of running, you know, building applications that run on the Windows platform, ASP.NET, all that kind of stuff. I use open, you know, languages which are have open source implementations, editors which are open source, you know, run on Debian Linux servers with, you know, Apache, and I just wouldn't tolerate anything else. And it's not just because it's a good server platform or whatever else. It's the fact that if it's something which I am using for something serious rather than reading PDFs on the train and listening to music, which, to be fair, you know, if I could live without, or I could, you know, go and buy a freaking Discman or something and listen to CDs or something else. When it comes to stuff which involves money, involves building software, I'm fully there. I'm, you know, I use only open source tools to build software, and you know, and a lot of people who use a Mac or use, you know, have these devices are also in that category. I'm pretty sure Cristiano is probably the same. I mean,
yeah, I am.
In terms of development, we're all kind of. I wouldn't basically use a language if there wasn't a decent open source implementation and all that. So, I mean, half the battle has already been won. Like, it's.
Again, it comes back to my distinction between really kind of consumer facing technology. I mean, and I think that's why the Apple and the iPhone are that popular, even with the people who would like to go into the kind of free software, free angle, is that it just works really, really well if you actually just want to live.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, they don't really work for me. As I said, the thing that bothers me most about those devices is a completely, you know, I couldn't hack the things that I want to hack on those because there's this touch thing and, you know, it's completely different. So
I don't get what your whole touch thing is.
Well,
it's just an input device, mate.
But you can.
Yeah, but it's a completely different input device.
Wow.
To the
one. Were you this upset about the mouse too, or?
Well, I don't really
it's
use.
It's a different mice. Thing. It only has three buttons. Oh, sorry, it only has two buttons.
The mouse.
More input.
Yeah, and I don't really use one, really, very much. And an application that forces me to use a mouse. Are you happy using applications that force you to use a mouse?
No, I use the keyboard a lot, but there's also some things where the mouse comes in really, really handy. Especially
like
sitting back, watching a video, and just, you know, clicking around.
Well, I was more thinking Photoshop, personally, and GIMP.
Oh, Photoshop, GIMP.
Surely, yeah. But the right tool for those is a tablet, isn't it?
Not always. Actually use a tablet, but it's not always.
To be fair, I mean, the point about it is that, you know, yes, I can take a laptop with me, but actually, what's kind of nice about the iPad is the fact that it's kind of, you know, whether it's open source or closed source, you know, that's a kind of political matter, is a purely technical thing. It's an interesting new device that you use in a much different way. I mean, you know, if you're station and you've got 5 minutes to wait for a train, you're not necessarily going to get your laptop out, open it up, log in, you know, that's not necessarily going to happen. you pull this thing out of your bag, you push one button, and then you tap a thing on the screen, and you read Twitter. And then, you know, you when you're done, you push this button on the top, and it goes to sleep instantly. It's not like crazy situations I've had, like, you take a laptop and you put it to sleep, and it doesn't quite go to sleep, and it sits in your bag and mumbles it to itself. And I've done that. I've got on a plane with my netbook, told it to go to sleep, and it hasn't gone to sleep properly, and it just sits in the bag for the next 3 hours, using up its own battery, and then you get it out and use it.
That's shit. Like, but that doesn't, like, you know.
It doesn't justify the politics of it.
I still don't get what's wrong with touch. I mean, to me, touch, it takes... I mean, if you say you only use a keyboard, right?
Well, it's not...
Keyboard is a very determined kind of input device. It's an invented kind of input device. Somebody came up with the keys that you're going to have, and it's simply your years of training that put that in place. Right, that put that mindset in place. And the reason why there is a use for a mouse is because when I move a mouse, I actually see the cursor move on the screen, and it actually has this interaction between a specific point on the screen and a specific point of where my hand is. Right, and the cool thing, what I think about touch, is that it takes away that interface. It takes away the interface between the computer and the person. When I click on something, use your finger and point at it.
Well, it's also, it's for a lot of tasks, you just don't need it. You don't need the keyboard for a lot of tasks.
No, you don't need the mouse.
You don't need the mouse. You just, like,
you just need the pointer.
If you're reading a PDF, all you need is, at certain points, you need to be able to tell the device, I want to move down the page, or I want to move to the next page.
Yes.
Why do I need a keyboard or a mouse for that when I can just drag the page?
Yes.
It seems, for a lot of these things, you don't need most of the functionality, and then when you do need the keyboard, it pops up at the bottom. And it's, to be fair, on the iPad, so you've got it in landscape mode, you've got a landscape keyboard. I can type at about 2/3 the speed and accuracy I can on my laptop.
Yeah, you're not getting what my issue is. My issue isn't really that I object to touch in principle. I don't object to touch in principle. I don't object to... There was a suggestion from somebody reviewing the podcast that we're very anti non-technical users. And I'm not. I would love everybody to have a computer. I would love everybody to be on the internet connected. And I try to be very accepting of people. I have strong political convictions about freedom, but at the end of the day... I compromise in order to get people using computers. So my objection isn't one to the idea of touch. My objection is one that, for me, as a hacker, the device is useless to me. I can't make it do... I am constrained to working within certain boundaries. I'm sure I could go and make a holiday management app or... something that turned it into a torch.
Can I
run Emacs on this with any success? No, I can't. And Emacs is where I keep my life, and it, you know, in org mode or whatever. And if it isn't Emacs, it's the shell. And I'm okay. Touch, that's fine. But for me, what bothers me is that it's a completely new interface. What are the APIs to that interface? I understand what the API to a mouse is. I've written mouse apps more than 5 times. In the old days when you had to... I don't know how old you are, Cristiano, but I'm a lot older than Tom. And in the old days when you actually had to go and read the mouse in every application you wrote on DOS or something like that, and you had to understand X and Y and say, oh, now I'm going to draw a pointer and all of those kind of things. And I've done that. I don't object to the mouse. I don't use it much, but I don't object to it. But on touch, it's a whole completely new operating system facade that actually I don't want most of the time. Most, you know, what I'm going to need is a keyboard on my portable computer. I want a keyboard. There are other devices that I can imagine. I was talking to somebody the other day about the Agenda, which was a device from the late 80s that had a cord system that was really, really powerful. That you could, the chords are like on a guitar, you can express loads of different notes through playing chords. Well, a chord system with keys is where you tap combinations of five keys to produce a whole load of different letters. So that kind of system would work for me. Something that is very good at lots of different character input, as opposed to pointing to things on the screen, which is never going to be very good for me. It's great for a lot of consumers, but probably never going to be useful for me.
So,
but you're seeing the entire infrastructure as a kind of. You see it as a binary kind of choice, whether or not we have to go with touch or not. I'm saying touch has its purpose really, really very strongly, just as the mouse has.
The point about it is the fact that you have this device, whether it's an iPhone or an iPad or an Arcos or whatever it is, and you just chuck in your bag, and it's small, and it's, you know, I would really like it if, you know, it's really quite annoying to me that there is now no Android phone that has an actual physical keyboard. And that's very annoying to me because the primary thing I do is I enter text, whether it's writing in English or in code.
Actually, I found those useless as well. I mean, they're not keyboards. So, you know, that's my point. I'm not really arguing against touch. It's fine for its place, but its place is limited, and it's not what I do most of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, as I've said before, what I would really like to do is have better MakerBots and then just make my own device, because I've got a laptop and I fucking hate it. It's terrible. If show me a computing device and I'll give you half an hour as to why that computing device is a piece of shit.
Well, everything sucks.
That was the topic of this podcast, I know.
Yeah. Almost all hardware sucks.
Yes. It
seems a fairly universal rule, but...
And software, are we leaving that out?
Software sucks in a different way. Sometimes software can reach the point of being tolerable at best. I'm pretty sure that, for instance, there is...
Well, by definition, it's tolerable. By definition, the hardware is tolerable, right? Because I'm still alive, and my laptop is still with me. But...
Oh, no, absolutely not. My Dell Mini 10V, right? You know, if it kills somebody by accident and ends up in jail, hooray.
But you haven't... If you really hated it, you'd throw it away.
I've tried.
It follows you.
No. It's like
new Dell Boomerang. I can't throw it away. It just comes back.
I've like accidentally kicked it off tables, and people went like, "Oh, your laptop." I was like, no, just leave it. Is it broken? No. Damn it.
You just want to get the insurance money,
No, come on.
It's not a joke.
If you really hated it, you'd stamp on it. You'd throw it away. You'd take it to a charity shop.
It's the only thing is that I sometimes, very, very, very sometimes, I need it because I want the keyboard.
What I meant by tolerable was the fact that sometimes software reaches a plateau where there isn't really a great deal you can say about it that's totally awful. I mean, I can't find much to complain about with, Cat or CD or Echo. I mean, they seem to be fairly well fit for their task. Anything beyond that level of...
I fucking hate Echo. Echo really gets on my tits. That whole new line thing.
Well, yeah, there's
why
that.
Why can't it do the new line thing properly? Oh, it's so annoying. I hate Echo. And I'm sure, if you give me a moment, I'm sure I could think of reasons why CD and Cat have got problems.
I think this means that you actually win the Grumpy Prize of the Week as...
I hate that.
Does he get a hat or something that he needs to carry for this?
I hate hats.
Wear for this week.
Okay, I think we need to call this to a close. I think we've now gone on for so long that that people will now be using this as an animal sedative.
I hate animal sedatives.
I think we could conclude that the score is 2-1 to iPad, right?
Well, just to make it so that in case you thought that, you know, the presence of me and Cristiano made you thought that actually people who have Macs and iPads and so on are actually tolerable people, you'll be pleased to know that this week a new website came out which proves the absolute opposite. It's cupidtino.com. It's a...
I'm pretty sure this is set up by somebody who has an Android phone or something.
It's a website. It's a dating website only for Mac users.
And it will actually only load if you've got a Mac.
You can only join the site. I think you may actually only be able to visit the website if you have a Mac.
No, that's not true. It works in WebKit.
It works in WebKit. Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay.
But
I think Ian was complaining about how it didn't work in
I think he was trying to view it on his phone, wasn't he?
Yeah. Or something.
$4.79 a month. You can join Cupidtino.
I think you should both join. You're all made for each other.
I already found mine.
And you've got a Mac user. You've hooked one in, and it's all fine. The best thing is the fact that on their FAQ, the best line is, "I use a PC at work, but a Mac at home. Can I sign onto the site at work with my PC?"
Absolutely not.
No, because we don't have a way to know that you actually have a Mac at home. It would just be too complicated from an experience perspective to track different machines people
own. There would be a perfect spin-off site, obviously, because if there's one thing that Mac users like to do, then it's convince non-Mac users. So there's a spin-off site for, like, blind dates where you meet up with a PC user, and you get to very romantically convince the PC user that they should switch.
You can just imagine this kind of, this restaurant, and it's just filled with annoying people with iPads. Instead of talking about, you know, nice romantic things, they just pull out this iPad. Say, "You need."
Couldn't you just say people with iPads?
Just play multi-pong.
Yeah. Well,
just to be clear, sometimes my sarcasm gets lost in my accent. That was sarcasm.
I have to say, it was very amusing listening to the first Pad Addicts. I know we're getting deeply meta at this point, talking about other podcasts which people haven't necessarily listened to. The point at which Hodge thought that you hadn't understood him because of your accent, when you hadn't laughed at one of his jokes, when in fact... the problem wasn't the fact that you didn't understand him. The fact was that the joke was shit.
Happier Isle. Laughing at other people. I don't know.
That was most amusing. I think I may have tweeted about it in response, but it's...
I'm obviously using this moment to not laugh about your joke.
You see, this is why we have Ian on the show, because he laughs at everything.
Yeah.
So we can just come up with the most bumbled joke about, you know, the internals of GCC or something, and, you know,
Ian will always titter.
Yeah. So we miss him, man.
Are we now starting to talk about Ian? He's not going to listen this far in anyway. Is that the idea?
Basically, once you get past an hour, we can basically slag off anyone... because nobody's ever, you know, if somebody hears that they've been slagged off in the show, they're not going to get to an hour and a half in and think.
They'll scan forward. Have you noticed that most of those things, you can just adjust the time meter, skip past the boring bit of me ranting about freedom?
Well, yeah, you can do that, but, you know, it's a kind of...
I'm pretty sure I just did that
It's called sleep. It's a very natural time.
Anyway, you guys were going to moan about iPhone 4 or something. Have we got 5 minutes to spend on that and then wrap up?
So, iPhone 4.
Were we? Oh.
I don't think we were, but okay. I don't
Cristiano wanna... kept trying to drag this up, and he's a guest.
Huh?
Do you want to rant about the iPhone 4?
Oh, the iPhone 4. Yeah, no, that's just a silly device.
Mm.
I do not understand why everybody stood in line for that thing.
Well, what
it's made of double-sided glass.
What I don't understand is the fact that you now can't go into an... Like, I went into the Apple store the other day in
Did
London.
Did you get applause?
Sorry?
Did you get applause? I went to the Apple store yesterday and I got applause.
Oh,
did you get the clap, though?
Were you there for the Covent Garden opening, then?
Well, I went there at like 5 just to have a look, and they were constantly applauding everybody that walked in.
That sounds...
Sorry, applauding everybody that walked in.
That sounds a little bit like Alcoholics Anonymous, which, to be fair, it probably is.
Sounds a bit like a cult.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what it is.
I went into the new Covent Garden store, actually, and it's... Well, it's good that it's there, but it is a bit strange. I mean, it's just 3 floors of Apple people.
It's massive.
It's absolutely enormous, and it's
beautiful building.
They have one small attention to detail floor, which is that the stairs get a little bit crammed with people.
There's another floor, which is there's also stairs going down.
Mm.
Which are also
made
of glass.
That's Apple hell.
No, it just goes to the toilets. But I made the mistake, including like 5 other people, to just go like, oh, well, I'll go to the basement first. Oh, no, that's just the toilet. Oh, turn around, everybody up again. And then there was like 5 other people coming our way, probably going into the same trap.
It was absolutely rammed with people, but it might actually mean that if you live in London, you might actually be able to get a Genius Bar appointment sometime this side of Christmas, which is probably no bad thing. I find that actually if I need to have any Genius Bar stuff, I'd have to go to freaking Lakeside or somewhere like that to actually get it done, because you just can't get appointments in London anymore.
Like I said in the first episode of Pad Addicts, be happy because there's no Genius Bar in the Netherlands.
Oh, well, yeah, that's...
So
I might move.
It's a nice country.
It would be... Actually, that reminds me, it would be very amusing if Stallman were to kind of set up a separatist kind of group. A bit like some of the libertarians in the US have set up, you know, a thing where they're all going to move to one place and then kind of subtly change the laws. Over time and get themselves to run that.
You should run a CM for Sweden.
You can just imagine all these like Linux users all, you know, deciding to move to Oregon or somewhere and take over the state and turn it into the GNU.
But we don't believe in that. We believe in engaging in turning up to podcasts and whining at people about why they like shiny things and not free things. That's what we believe in. That's our raison d'etre.
It's working very, very well.
Yeah.
Well, certainly we're doing it. Whether it's working or not, it's another question entirely. But
well, I can thoroughly.
We're committed.
I can thoroughly recommend. I should make an explicit disclaimer at the end of this podcast. Just because I bought an iPad doesn't mean you should. You should consider all the options, including the GNU free software options too. You may find that they actually suit your needs much better. And you should take Richard Stallman's, you should take his ethics seriously, even if you don't necessarily take his hygiene that seriously.
I want to add to that disclaimer the fact that I agree that you do not need to buy an iPad, and I also think that you do not need an iPad to listen to the Pad Addicts podcast.
No.
I'm going to add to that disclaimer and tell people to look at what we said last week about the reasons people buy iPads and the people who don't. I think that it was they're more intelligent, more handsome, and funnier. I think those were the things they said about people who don't buy iPads. Pretty sure.
And let me remind you that
this is still not a video podcast.
This is an online survey that was conducted on Facebook. This is the flip side. Once you read past the headline, which is the sad bit I didn't get as far as reading, it's a bunch of people on Facebook.
Everybody's on Facebook.
Sorry?
Everybody's on Facebook.
But it's a... Well, no, very various people I know aren't, but it's it was a pretty ropey...
Oh, survey. Now he's bought an iPad. Well, it's actually, a pretty ropey survey.
To be fair, I did actually know about this a few days before buying the iPad. And having debunked the thing in my mind, this was the final straw. I had the list of applications I wanted and whatnot, and then
listeners, you be the judges.
Yeah, well.
Again, still not a video podcast.
I will now be turning into the annoying asshole that the survey last week demonstrated. But that's
sorry,
fine,
turning
because
into
I'm still grumpy, and that's all you need to be on this the podcast.
The only qualification for this show
is grumpiness. So yeah, that's fine. And I think with that. Before we piss off anyone else by going on excessively longer, we should shut the fuck up because we've gone on too long anyway. So that's it. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.